Things we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Our starting line on the Sunny Side of Sports is African athletics. Uganda won 2 gold medals at this month's World Championships in Doha. Joshua Cheptegei was crowned world champion in the men's 10,000 meters, while Halima Nakai won gold in the women's 800 meters. Both runners are looking forward to more athletic success, and they believe their wins will inspire young Ugandans. Magume Davis Rakawinj tells us more from Kampala, Uganda.
Uganda middle distance runner Halima Nakai says she was not surprised winning gold because she had import training along with her teammates before they traveled to Doha. She describes to the Sunny Side of Sports her feelings, moments after winning gold at the World Championship.
Oh my God, winning that gold medal, it was so amazing. I was very happy. My teammates were very happy. So many people were very happy. My dream had come true. It has been a long-term goal. So I was so proud, and I always feel proud about that.
Despite winning bronze at the African Games in Rabat, Morocco, Nakai promised to run for a better medal at even a more challenging competition, the World Championship. And after finishing with 158.4, Nakai not only broke her national record, but also became the first Ugandan to win the 800 meters race in World Championship. Her training mate, Willie Nanyondo, also came close, finishing fourth in the same race. Another Ugandan, Joshua Cheptegei, won the 10,000 meters race.
I've been consistent in my way of delivering, of course, in a big stage. Look, for example, the last year in the Commonwealth Games and this year's World Cross Country, the Diamond League, and of course the World Championship. That tells you that even the future is really great. Come next year, the Olympic Games, and even ahead of the Olympic Games and other years, of course, to come in big championships. And of course, in the future, of course, where I hope I intend to become marathon champion, of course, of all time, of course. And that is really my roadmap, and I believe that with time I can reach there.
Cheptegei's heroics have won him a nomination for the annual IAAF Male Athlete of the Year Award and becomes the first Ugandan to be nominated for the award. Rafael Majezi, Uganda middle distance coach, describes Uganda's participation at the recent championships as the greatest.
It's one of the best performances the country has had, because one, we finished in the top 10 in the world on the medal table, which has never happened before. Then you look at the events that we won the medals. For Cheptegei, it was automatic. Everyone knew he would get a medal. But the most sensational thing about these world championships was Halima Nakai's gold medal in the middle distance. I think it was a dream come true for the nation, because this is something that has never happened before.
Magezi says these world champions will inspire many other young Ugandans to win medals when they compete in international competitions. And Nakai has some advice for upcoming athletes.
To keep on believing themselves, to be patient and God-fearing, and be hard-working, that things are possible. And no human is limited. Everything is possible in life. You can be, you can determine in whichever life you want to be in. So I always told them, success is a choice.
But both Cheptegei and Nakai say the government must invest in facilities to be able to tap in the raw talent. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I am Magume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Thanks, Magume. We heard Joshua Cheptegei say he's looking forward to next year's Olympic Games in Japan. Another athlete who hopes to compete at the Tokyo 2020 Olympics is Britain's Steph Twell, who finished 8th among the women Sunday in the Minova Frankfurt Marathon in Germany. The 30-year-old 12 finished in a personal best time of 2 hours, 26 minutes, and 40 seconds, comfortably inside the Olympic qualifying time for Tokyo 2020. Now, if she is selected for Britain's Olympic team, Tokyo 2020 would be 12's third Olympic Games. Steph competed in the women's 1500 meter heats at the 2008 Olympics in Beijing and the 5000 meter heats at the 2016 Olympics in Rio de Janeiro. The energetic Andy Edwards caught up with Steph in Frankfurt. Here's Andy.
Steph, it was a great day for you in the Frankfurt Marathon Sunday. Olympic qualifying time, of course. Scottish record, 2:26:40. It was your second marathon. I just wonder, do you feel now, and obviously looking ahead to Tokyo, do you feel right, I am now a marathon runner?
It's a really big question. I think there is part of me now that has a bit more belief in myself. It's been tough because I've had two quite tame build-ups. One, my first marathon was very short. This one was, some people might say there was distractions with Doha and it wasn't fully geared towards the marathon, but I'm delighted with my time. I think I ran positively with a free mind and I really wanted the record. I would like to call myself a marathoner, but I can see the strength and depth of a nucleus of girls that I'm moving forward with, and I'd like to still see my times tumble. So, yeah, fingers crossed.
What was the feel? And, of course, I suppose this is relevant for people who aren't elite, but anybody who, if you'd never get comfortable in the marathon, but the difference between you debut in Valencia in December and now October in Frankfurt, okay, running much faster, yeah. But in your body and how you reacted, especially in the later stages?
Yeah, there was a huge learning curve even in the space of one marathon, really. So Valencia have only really done probably a 6-month build up in this year, 3 months prior to this race, and not even three months, it's probably 8 weeks prior to Valencia actually. And I guess for me, I felt really good knowing that this time round in my marathon build-up, it was more specific. Like my first marathon build-up, I only had a 5-mile tempo as my longest tempo. My mileage was averaged about 68.5. Now I've moved up to about 80-mile average per over 12 weeks, which I'm pleased with, and I know that there's still more room to go. But I think actually that didn't find me out. I felt really good, but for me it was actually a refueling learning curve. Yesterday, meaning that the last 7K, I just needed to take on more gels or more drinks, but I didn't take it on early enough, and that really did come back. And I really understand what the marathon's about now. But I got to 40K, had my bottle, and finished strong again. So I think there's some things that I can work on for sure.
Well, talking about things you can work on, let's tempt fate and the gods, but say you're in Tokyo, Olympic marathon. There seems to be a move towards now the marathon in, going to Sapporo, yeah. Where weather conditions consistently are friendlier than in Tokyo in midsummer. Would you prepare any differently if it really is Sapporo?
I don't think so. I think from what I've heard, the temperature is still between 25 and 26 degrees compared to maybe the 30 degrees to 32 that they're expecting in Tokyo. So for me, it's going to be new challenges compared to my normal climate at home living in Britain. So I've got to prepare with humidity and heat training, and those tools I'm going to have to learn quite quickly now. I'm quite a quick learner, but if things do go well, then absolutely I'd love to be racing for Great Britain in the marathon. I think the Japanese running scene's insane and fabulous, so I would love to experience that at Olympic Games and just focus on my internal performance and having the best impact I can have at an Olympic Games. I've been to two already, and for me, I want to see, is it the 10K or the marathon? But I think it's more likely to be the marathon.
Well, yesterday was a good pointer. Steph Twell, congratulations and thanks very much.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Helen Maroulis, Olympic champion for Team USA, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. They're playing basketball
without that basketball. Five teams are set to take part in the Basketball Africa League Group B preliminary round games. The tournament is scheduled from today, Tuesday, through Sunday, November 3rd. To find out more, Iron Mike Mbonye called the president of FIBA Africa Zone 3, Colonel Sam Amadou.
The tournament is the Basketball Africa League Group B qualifying preliminaries. and it is for teams in FIBA Africa 03. Which means five teams are going to slug it out for two slots of going to the next qualifying rounds.
These five teams, from which, how many countries are they from, sir?
They are from Benin, Cote d'Ivoire, Liberia, Ghana, and Niger.
After this stage or level of the tournament, what next after this?
Yes, the two qualified teams from this group will join the other two qualified teams from other groups. All together, there are six groups now. Two teams from each group will qualify. That will be 12 teams. Those 12 teams will be further divided into two groups of 6-6 each. And those two groups of 6-6 each will play. Then the top three teams will qualify for the final rounds of BAL, which means the three teams from the Eastern group plus the three teams from the Western group, that is six, will now join those six automatically qualified countries. That makes it 12 teams which will compete in the final rounds of BAL.
Okay, as the president of FIBA Africa Zone 3, how hopeful are you about the countries or teams taking part from your zone?
Well, we are hopeful, but first, you need to start from the foundation. So the major thing now is the Group B qualifiers in Cotonou. As we speak, teams have already started arriving in Cotonou for the competition. So the teams are going to play from Tuesday to the 3rd of November. We are optimistic that the teams will give their best, and we respect the best teams to emerge.
That's Colonel Sam Amadou, the president of FIBA Africa Zone 3, and he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Lagos, Nigeria.
Hi, my name is Colonel Sam Amadou, retired, the president of FIBA Africa Zone 3. I want to give a shout out to the Sunny Side of Sports. Thank you.
In National Basketball Association action Monday night, the Houston Rockets beat the visiting Oklahoma City Thunder by 4 points, as we hear now from the AP's Adam Spillane.
In their first meeting since the July blockbuster that saw Russell Westbrook and Chris Paul switch teams, the Houston Rockets beat the Oklahoma City Thunder 116-112. Westbrook narrowly missed a triple-double with 21 points, 12 rebounds, and 9 assists.
Inside those lines, with no friends. Spalding, that's my friend and my teammates, and that's it.
Paul scored 15 points. James Harden led all scorers with 40 points.
We picked up our defensive intensity. It's still early in the season, but that's going to be what gets us over the top, what gets us where we want to go. And, we got a little lackadaisical in our first half. Second half, we picked it up, and look at the results.
He connected on 21 of 22 free throw attempts as the Rockets overcame a 10-point halftime deficit by outscoring the Thunder 39-18 in the third quarter. Dennis Schroeder and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander led Oklahoma City with 22 points. Adam Spillane, Houston.
Thanks, Adam. In more NBA news, Cameroonian star Joel Embiid has helped spark the Philadelphia 76ers to their third win of the season. The AP's Gary McKillops reports from Atlanta, Georgia.
Joel Embiid scored 36 points, including a pair of free throws with 5 seconds left, as the Philadelphia 76ers defeated the Atlanta Hawks 105-103. Embiid had 13 rebounds and 5 assists as the Sixers moved to 3-0 on the season. The Philly center said the fast start is great, but it's a long road ahead.
We still got 79 games. It's a long way, 3-0. You know, very fortunate to be in this position, but we still got a lot of work to do.
Trae Young, who averaged 38.5 points in Atlanta's first two games, was held to 25. The Hawks dropped to 2-1. Gary McKillops, Atlanta.
Thanks, Gary. Gary mentioned Atlanta guard Trae Young. Well, Trae and Minnesota Timberwolves center Karl Anthony Towns were named the NBA Players of the Week for Week 1. In the new NBA season, Karl Anthony Towns averaged 32 points and 13 rebounds a contest in 3 Minnesota victories. In more NBA news, Los Angeles Lakers star LeBron James is among the evacuees as a fire that erupted Monday in Southern California grows to more than 70 acres. LeBron tweeted just before 4 a.m. local time Monday that he was trying to find rooms for his family, and he called the fires no joke. LeBron later tweeted that he found accommodation, and he said he was praying for those affected by the fires. LeBron James and the Lakers will be back on the court later Tuesday night when they host the Memphis Grizzlies in Los Angeles. The Lakers have 2 wins and 1 loss early in this NBA season, while the Grizzlies have 1 victory and 2 defeats. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. U.S. Soccer President Carlos Cordero has named Vlatko Andonovski as the new head coach of the world champion U.S. women's national team. VOA's Gwen Uten joins us now with more details. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Carlos Cordero told reporters on Monday that after casting a very wide net, Vlatko Andonovski was deemed the perfect fit to head the U.S. national women's team.
Although I was not on the search committee myself, I had the opportunity to meet with Vlatko a couple of weeks ago and to get to know him. I think it's fair to say that he is everything you'd want in a head coach. As a former player himself, he knows how the right coach can motivate players to be their best. And as a coach in the NWSL for all 7 of its seasons, he led his teams to the playoff 5 times and to back-to-back championships in Kansas City. And just the other day, he was named NWSL Coach of the Year for the 2nd time. Vlatko is known for his deep understanding of the game, his unmatched preparation, and his tactical flexibility. Frankly, I can't imagine a more perfect match than this coach for this team at this moment in time.
Andonovski has some very big shoes to fill. He succeeds Jill Ellis, the most successful coach in U.S. women's national team history. Earlier this month, Ellis officially stepped down from her post as head coach after leading Team USA to a 2nd consecutive Women's World Cup title. And riding the coattails of the team's success, Andonovski says the first thing on his agenda is qualifying for the 2020 Tokyo Olympic Games.
First and foremost, I know that the Olympic tournament is about a year away, but most importantly for us is before that is to qualify for the tournament, and that's going to be our first thing on the agenda. And we have a very, very experienced team. We have players that have been on the international stage. They've won big games, big tournaments. So we're going to rely heavily on them, but that doesn't mean that we're not going to expand the roster. It doesn't mean that we're not going to expand the pool and deepen the pool. We're going to look at new players, and at the end, the ones that perform the best at training, at game, will get a chance to be on the roster.
Andonovski has served as head coach in the National Women's Soccer League since 2013, a stint that included 2 championships in 2014 and 2015. He's just been named National Women's Soccer League's Coach of the Year for a 2nd time. The first was in 2013. He leaves his post as coach of Reign FC for his new position, and Andonovski expressed his deep respect for the members of the U.S. Women's National Team.
I'm very, very respectful of the drive, of the push that the players have. In fact, that's positive for me because they will translate to the field. And I have no doubt in my mind once they step on the field that they're going to be focused on what is important at that time. Once they put the jersey on, they put everything else on the side, and they're focused on winning games. They've proved that in the past, and like I said, I have no doubt in my mind that they're going to do that in the future.
The selection process for the new coach came under the leadership of national team general manager Kate Markgraf, and she says Andonovski's appointment was unanimously approved based on his record that speaks for itself.
I think anytime you're evaluating a coach, you want to be able to identify their style of play, because then you can really benchmark that of whether or not they were able to achieve that. against different opponents. And I think the one thing that's consistent, that when you watch any of Latko's teams, you always saw a very consistent thing, is they like to have the ball. They're very sound defensively, and they attack creatively. So I think that's very consistent across the board. It's just a matter of the execution and how it looks, the strategies in which you employ in order to achieve your objective.
Mark Graff also said she consulted with current and former players during the selection process, and Andonovsky said he's grateful he has their stamp of approval.
It's very important to know that the players are excited just as well as me. Okay, like I said before, they're some of the best players in the world, and to know that some of the best players in the world value the knowledge, the understanding, and the job that I do, it's extremely important for me. And, I mean, I'm just humbled by some of their comments.
The U.S. women's national team will play their first international friendly match under Andonovsky's leadership in November. Then in January, the new head coach hopes to check off the first item on his agenda, qualifying for the 2020 Tokyo Olympics. And that is all from me for now. Sunny, back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. And here are a few fun facts about Vlatko Andonovsky, the new head coach of the world champion U.S. women's national soccer team. Vlatko was born in Macedonia, and in his playing days, he was a defender. He played for multiple clubs in Europe, and in 2000, Vlatko signed with the Wichita Wings of the National Professional Soccer League. Vlatko later played for the Kansas City Comets, the California Cougars, and the Philadelphia Kicks in Major Indoor Soccer League. Vlatko was a standout player in indoor soccer. He was named the league's most valuable player in 2005. In African football news, South Africa's new head coach, Molefe Nseke, has named a 25-man team for next month's Africa Cup of Nations qualifying matches against Ghana and Sudan. The South Africans will travel to Accra, where they'll play Ghana on November 14th. And then Bafana Bafana will host Sudan in Johannesburg on November 17th. The matches against the Ghanaians and the Sudanese will open South Africa's qualifying campaign for the 2021 Africa Cup of Nations tournament in Cameroon. Coach Nseke has brought back the majority of players who helped him win his debut match earlier this month. That was a 2-1 victory over Mali in an international friendly. Midfielder Dean Furman of Supersport United and Mamelodi Sundowns man Temba Zwane scored the goals for South Africa in that friendly against Mali on October 13th, and they've been included on the roster. Coach Nseke also brought back defender Tamsankwa Mkhize of Cape Town City, who pulled out of the friendly victory against Mali because of an ankle injury. Elsewhere in African football, Egypt's head coach Hassam El Badri has recalled Liverpool star Mohamed Salah to his team for next month's Africa Cup of Nations qualifying matches against Kenya and Comoros. The Egyptians will host the Kenyans on November 14th and then travel to the Comoros to play another qualifier on November 18th. El Badri agreed to rest Salah for a 1-0 friendly victory against Botswana earlier this month. If you tuned in to Monday's Sunny Side of Sports, you heard Prince Nesta say how Mo Salah sealed Liverpool's 2-1 win against Tottenham Hotspur on Sunday with a 75th-minute penalty shot, and Mo Salah was named Man of the Match. And that wraps up the October 29th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to my producer this evening, Daniel Downtown Brown. Thanks also to VOA engineer Charleston Mock. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
What's going on, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi coming to you from the Voice of America studios here in Washington, D.C. Join us each week on Upfront as we discuss a range of topics. The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
Eliminate the mentality that girls cannot do what boys can do.
You basically need to go to school. There's just no way you're going to get all the skills that people want from you or they expect from you if you're not at school.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
And to AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Yes, finally, it's the weekend. Hey there, this is Heather Maxwell. Do you really want to enjoy yourself? I can help you with that. You don't even have to leave your home or spend a single cent. Just tune in to your local radio station this Sunday and listen to Music Time in Africa. 55 minutes of commercial-free Pan-African music, exclusive interviews, and music news. This Sunday's playlist features amazing music from 12 different countries. Song of the week is Je suis Africain by the late Rachid Taha from Algeria. And my vintage tune takes you back to 1983 Ghana. Yenti by Smart Nkanza and Becky B. Yenti. So don't miss it. Music Time in Africa, 1505 or 2005 Universal Time.
Voice of America's global news program, International Edition, brings you the biggest stories of the day. Our global correspondents report the news objectively and comprehensively, keeping you informed about important world events. International Edition provides analysis from the most seasoned experts around the world to put the day's events into context to better understand what's happening and how it may affect you. Listen to International Edition Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 Universal Time on the Voice of America or your local affiliate. You can also listen to the show on demand by visiting the program page at voanews.com or by subscribing to the show wherever you get your podcasts. VOA's International Edition, your go-to source for accurate, comprehensive, and objective news.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers at the European Southern Observatory may help make the case for an asteroid to be reclassified as a dwarf planet. Called Hygieia, the object is the fourth largest in the asteroid belt, located between Mars and Jupiter. Using ESO's Very Large Telescope, the astronomers observed and imaged Hygieia at a high resolution to allow them to determine the object is spherical in shape. The astronomers say that Hygieia already met three of the four requirements to be classified as a dwarf planet. It orbits the Sun, it's not a moon, and unlike a regular planet, it's not the dominant object in its orbit. The fourth requirement is that the object has enough mass for its own gravity to pull it into a roughly spherical shape, which has now been determined by the astronomers' observations. If reclassified, Hygieia would be the smallest dwarf planet. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.